Assorted Digital Ramblings Podcast, brought to you by Click Through Marketing.
Welcome to the Assorted Digital Ramblings Podcast, a monthly hour-long listener marketing and relevant subject matters to what's happening around the world right now, with expert opinions from our staff at Click Through Marketing. We're here to make marketing accessible to anyone. I'm Chris, and this time around, things are changing a little, as although I'm here doing the introduction, I'm actually not hosting alongside Liv. For this episode, I'll be the guest, and our guest from episode 3, Steph, who's our head of content, will be taking my place as host. So before I swap metaphorical seats, how have you both been?
All good. In the hood with me. Been busy as usual, but nothing too crazy. Steph, what about you?
To be honest, I'm in holiday mode. I go to a festival on Monday, so this is my last hurrah for the working week.
Woohoo! What festival are you going to?
I'm going to Sziget, which is in Budapest, which I now know is in Hungary. I'm not good at geography, so this has all been a bit of a blur for me.
Have you got the right flights and stuff?
I believe so. I haven't been in charge of that. No one lets me do logistics.
Yeah, that's good then. Who's performing?
Oh, there's loads, but we've got headliners as Arctic Monkeys, Dua Lipa. I think Lewis Capaldi will be knocking about. Yeah, it's going to be 6 days long, so wish me luck for that.
Oh my God, you're going to be zombie by the time next time I see you.
Yeah.
You're too old for a 6 day festival.
I'm too old for a 6 day festival. I don't stare.
Thanks, Liv.
It's all right. Chris, what about you? How are you? What have you been up to?
I'm all right, thank you. I've been enjoying our various sporting prowesses over the last month or so. Have you been watching? Did you watch the women's football Commonwealth Games?
Women's football at the Commonwealth Games, or the women's football and?
No.
Women's football claim to fame. I actually know one of the goalies. So Hannah Hampton, who was one of the reserves on the England squad, I went to school with her, and we used to be blonde buddies, and now she's smashing being football. But I did
now she's a European
I did
champion.
Teach her, to be fair, so no wonder she's there, you know what I mean? I'm just so good. It's crazy.
I'd heard people saying you're a keeper, but I don't know.
That's good. Yeah, have you guys been watching?
Yeah.
What's everyone thinking? Does anyone think that they could do like a job in like a sport at the Commonwealth Games?
What, like do the actual event?
Yeah, like do you reckon you could do it and do a good job?
I used to do athletics and gymnastics, but I think since puberty hit, I'm not great at either of those things. But I then did journalism at uni, so I could probably write up the events. I think that's about as far as my partaking would go. Chris?
Nice.
I think if I had to pick an event that I could have any form of chance for, maybe shot put. But I'd have to represent, like, Jersey and be like, you know that 1,500-metre runner that finished 7 minutes after Alicia Colgan? I'd be like that one. I'd just be clearing my own feet, but everyone would be really happy for me because I was just there.
Yeah, like Eddie the Eagle.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
So taking part that counts.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm trying to think of a Chris the Miss or something, I don't know, but we'll move on. Anyway, getting down to the brass tacks, to the business. I'm sure that everyone's aware that we're catapulting right now towards a recession, which is quite sad. But as much as the world is struggling with the cost of living, with energy prices rising, and as well as the cost of many day-to-day necessities rising too, what exactly has caused the issue that we're all facing? And as the guest of the podcast today, Chris, I want to go straight to you. What do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's been a catalogue, hasn't it? There's been a lot of different things going on. We're coming out the back of COVID, and different countries' responses to COVID has been very different. So China, for example, has still been, until relatively recently, in like really strict lockdowns, and like the port in Shanghai is pretty much a global hub for the whole shipping industry. That being on lockdown has caused all sorts of supply chain issues. Supply chain issues mean people can't manufacture to keep up with demand. So the car industry, for example, at the moment is really, really struggling because they just can't get some of their components. We're also seeing inflation, and this isn't just in the UK, like across the globe we're seeing inflation in the cost of goods, in the cost of gas, electricity. The Bank of England today has announced an interest rate increase. Now that's to try and counter the impact of inflation, but effectively what they're trying to do is reduce the amount of money people have to spend, because if people are spending less, prices naturally have to come down. Classic supply and demand graph. Sure, you've studied that in your endeavours over the years, right? Let's be honest. There's also a level of greed. Like, it's pretty hard to swallow hearing your energy bills are going to go up by £3,000-£4,000 a year, and then you see Centrica, who own British Gas, have posted record profits 5 times higher than the last quarter and all this sort of stuff. That's pretty hard to swallow. There's also the Ukraine-Russia war as well, which is probably like the cherry on top, because again, a lot of commodities come out of Russia, like grain. I think Ukraine's one of the biggest grain producers globally, and up until I think it was a week ago, they finally got a shipment of grain out because they agreed like safe passage for a ship through Russian waters. Can't get grain, you can't make things like bread, price of that goes up. So there's all these things going on, and they're all kind of conspiring to, I guess, put a squeeze on people's expendable income. When people don't have as much income to spend, the economy starts to shrink, and unfortunately we're heading for a pretty big, deep, long recession, which is not going to be a fun topic to talk about, but I think it's going to impact every facet of our lives, let alone the marketing we do and the work we do for our clients.
I think that was a really, really quite surprisingly good analysis of what's happened. In fact, I've actually quite gobsmacked. I was quite, well, actually well interested in that then. And I didn't think you'd give all the gravy, but you've given it, and it's good.
There you go.
Obviously, it's not a good thing that's happening, but good explanation, so thanks, Chris. Steph?
Yeah, Vinny. It was a good explanation. I'd feel a bit bummed out now, so cheers for that, Chris. But no, it's almost like a perfect storm, isn't it? We've just had all of these things happen that ultimately have placed a very big economic squeeze on pretty much the everyman, I would say. It's just one of those that I think... I don't really. You really have bummed me out, Chris. I don't think I've got words right now. I'm stunned.
This is a question to both of you, and obviously you don't have to answer it in much detail, but have you found yourself sort of like noticing what is actually going on around us? Have you noticed anything that's sort of like increased that's affected your day-to-day life? So obviously petrol or diesel's prices have increased, but have you noticed anything else that sort of like made you tighten your purse strings?
I've noticed quite substantially, which I didn't think that I would. So I've owned my house for 5 years now, and the increases in sort of the energy side of things, that I've really noticed. I mean, I've got a 2-up, 2-down terrace. I mean, I can put one radiator on, and then just by sheer force of being in a terrace, it normally heats up quite quickly. But price increases on that... it's put me on a bit of the back foot. And then the same thing of living alone, food shops, I mean, they don't really make things for ones. This sounds like a proper single girl
someone
plea,
dates
doesn't
it?
So, yes, send £5 or, you know, just take me out on a date, it'd be lovely, I don't have to pay for food. But it is that case of that, yeah, the food shop. So from, I think it was very much 1 week to the next, what was normally X amount was suddenly why, and I was having nothing different, and it's quite scary to think, how is this gonna, is it gonna keep extrapolating? Like, even petrol coming to Lichfield, I do it twice a week, and I've noticed that I've had to fill up more to do those two trips than, you know, a month ago. So it does impact on a lot of different levels that I think sort of the cost of living, and, you know, salaries, as time's gone on, they've increased with just how the world's gone. But yeah, it's a bit of a frightening time in a way. It feels like you don't know whether you want to sort of, you work to live, and at the moment it's work to
survive.
Be careful. Yeah, yeah.
And this is part of the problem, isn't it? There's this uncertainty because prices are going up and you're thinking, what's going to happen? Is this going to keep going for the next 6-12 months? And how am I going to cope? So are you going to go and make a big purchase that you may have made, where your confidence in can I afford it goes down? So it consumer confidence, believe it or not, is really, really key to whether we go into recession or whether we get through, because actually if you're not confident that you're going to be able to put food on the table, you're not going to go and buy a holiday, for example, or get that new TV or a new car or anything like that. And so many industries start to feel that contraction. I mean, you know, you hear some of the stories on the news about people having to choose between heating the house and feeding the kids, and you just think that must just be... And these are people that work hard. It must be the most heartbreaking, soul-destroying thing to have to go through. You know, I'm lucky we're not having to have to make that decision. Yes, we've felt the impact. The food shop's gone up. Filling the car up is now... takes you into three figures. Like, that's how much the fuel costs. But, you know, we're not having to make those horrible decisions that some people are. And I think we've just got to be grateful for that, despite all the horribleness going on in the world. There's a lot of people having to go through a really tough time, like food bank usage. We're one of the largest economies in the world, and food bank usage is higher than it's ever been. Like, the two things don't quite stack up, do they? But yeah, how about you, Liv? Have you noticed much difference in your day to day?
To be fair, I feel like I'm blissfully ignorant to sort of like the increase of gas prices, because I still live with my mum and dad, loving it. So I pay my set amount of board, which has like increased a little bit, but it's still like a set amount. So that's as much as I pay. The only thing that I've noticed with is diesel. So before I had a petrol car, so going up to diesel anyway was sort of like an extra, what is it? I don't want to say 20p, because it is like an extra 20p, isn't it, to diesel, to petrol. So it's an extra 20p a litre anyway. And then especially it just sort of like ballooning up to like $1.99 a litre, it was a bloody shock when I had to fill up the beast outside. Oh my God, I'd never sort of like held so tightly onto my debit card in my whole entire life. I thought I'd been scammed. I think diesel, petrol, that's the only thing that I've noticed. But I feel like, you know, I'm also saving for a house, which the house prices are going to increase massively, which is an absolute, you know, hit to the stomach. So that's going to be pushed back a little bit as well. So
there's actually a predicted housing market crash. So in another
year, when?
2024, I heard this was predicted for.
Absolutely. On schedule.
On Great. Schedule. There you go. Keep your savings and just wait, because your money's going to go further, because it can't keep going at this rate forever, right? It's not sustainable.
Have you seen that? I don't know if this is to do with I think it's to do with houses. The interest rates have just skyrocketed for the first time in 27 years, so it's gone up to 1.75%.
It's the biggest interest rate increase, for a very, very long time. And like I say, that's the Bank of England doing that effectively to try and encourage people to spend less, because if you spend less, companies can't keep charging the same prices if consumers aren't demanding it. Now, what that does impact is anyone on a variable rate mortgage, their payments have just gone up as of probably next month. So there's less expendable income. Obviously, those people on fixed rates are relatively unaffected by it. But yeah, anyone on a variable rate mortgage just got worse off by quite a lot each month. I haven't seen like stats on what it does to the average mortgage, but it's quite a big increase. Like, normally it's by 0.25% the change. I think this was a 1.25% change. So yeah, pretty serious news. Sorry, I feel like I'm really dragging the tone down.
I was going to say, yeah. Considering we're recording this on a Friday, I actually feel like I'm going to like cry myself to sleep tonight.
Pour yourself a big glass of wine after this.
Yeah.
But But with that, obviously talking about the housing sector, as a marketing agency, you know, we've all got a completely different portfolio of clients that spread across a lot of different sectors. They'll all be feeling that impact differently. I don't know about you guys, but have you noticed that there's been added pressure almost with the cost of living crisis? That does it seem to be limited to certain sectors? Is there anything that's particularly almost recession-proof, as it were?
I think it's always going to be highly variable, isn't it, depending on what sector somebody's in. You know, we've seen two clients go out of business so far this calendar year due to cash flow issues. We've seen others reducing their budgets because they're concerned about what's coming. Naturally, some industries are impacted more than others, right? Anything to do with, let's keep it cheery, seeing as we're on a cheery topic, anything to do with death is relatively recession-proof because people keep dying. How much people spend on funerals might change, but you know, it's not impacted as much as things like holidays, whereas before you might have been able to afford two holidays, you can now only afford one, or one you can't afford any. So it's going to be hugely variable, in the same way that it was during COVID. You know, there's some businesses that really thrived through COVID. You know, you couldn't buy kettlebells, for example, for a period of time because everyone was doing the home workouts. There's going to be industries that benefit from this. You know, just a guess off the top of my head, like if you sell solar panels for people's houses, I imagine demand for that is going up at the moment because anything you can do to offset your energy bill is going to be good. So there'll be industries that benefit, there'll be industries that really, really feel it. And then there'll be others that are largely affected. You know, like luxury brands, for example, they don't tend to be too badly affected by recession because recession impacts working class people a lot more than people that spend £1,000 on a handbag, for example. So yeah, it's going to be really variable. We're having lots of clients that are concerned about this. They're looking at the budgets and they're looking at how they can get through this.
I don't know about, obviously, but working behind the agency, like, window, as to say. Like, Chris, obviously you don't go client-facing, but Steph, I think you still are, aren't you, with some clients? How do you find the conversation of saying, oh, performance is, you know, down month on month, or it's going down month on month, and, like, mainly it's because of sort of, like, you know, user confidence dropping? But I always find that quite an awkward conversation to have. I don't know why, but I feel like sometimes once you've said it once, it takes away the meaning for the second time, but it's still happening, if you know what I mean. How do you feel about it, and how do you handle it?
Yeah, I think being in the industry for a long time, you sort of learn how to sort of frame things to give the context. So we're a marketing agency, so that's our bread and butter, you know, and sometimes we can get blinkered by delivering results of performance from a digital perspective. But what you have to do is take that data and look at what's the bigger picture. And it is just, even though we know it and we all live it, you'll be surprised how many people forget what day-to-day life is like when they're at work. So as clients, they're also people, and it is a case of just saying performance is down, but it is due to X, Y, and Z, from a global and environmental, a seasonal, all those factors come into play. And it's just about putting, sort of removing ourselves from the client and agency shoes and putting them into consumer. So they would all know themselves that they're probably not being as, not frivolous, but you know, like when payday hits and you do a little treat, people aren't quite thinking like that, other than the luxury market, as like you said, Chris. So it is just about almost bringing it back to reality a little bit, but at the same time, it's also finding those workarounds. So where performance could be down on a particular, you know, from a conversion side, what else could we do? So it's about then, in times like this, people look to online for, you know, entertainment and information. So there's things there where we can help to still bring in that audience and offer them something a little bit different. So it is just about applying the wider context, but it is still an awkward situation, but it's one that we can't shy away from because we'd be remiss to do so. Mm-hmm. But I think with that, and yeah, we really are going to have a very large glass of wine after this.
Yeah.
It does feel like it has, but it's been bad news followed by bad news when it comes to the economy, and that is having an impact. And kind of pretty much what we've just said, it does have that impact on consumer behaviour, like especially with the bills and insecure incomes. it does create that challenge for us as marketers. So do we, like Liv, especially with your clients, have you seen that there's been a change in demographics? Is it sort of been you've had to adapt those audience bases or targeting different lifestyles, or even just having a look at the sort of maybe not the higher ticket items and going more for like bundles? Or has there been sort of any strategic changes you've been making?
I think there's only one client in mind that at the moment is sort of like becoming or trying to make their strategy recession proof, and it's for high ticket priced items that like, so it's like pots and pans, but really, really high quality pots and pans that cost a lot of money, but a lot of people aren't going to be buying that because they can just pop down to Aldi and get sort of like a casserole dish for a fiver instead of paying like 200 quid for one. But what we have done is have an audience change. So instead of just targeting broad 18 plus, like male, female, we've now actually gone into a like high influence earners, sort of like influencers and people like that who, you know, it's like the rules don't apply when it comes to the recession, isn't it? So sort of like trying to get them to sort of like engage more so. And sort of like I was the one that was changing the audience. And if I'm honest, I felt really, really like scummy about it. Like change, because I felt like, I don't know, like I was trying to, you know, get the most out of their money, which at the end of the day is my job to do. But like, I'm sort of like, you know, not saying a big F you to the big man. I'm sort of like saying, yeah, no worries, mate. I'll help you still sort of like keep afloat. So that's the only thing that I've sort of changed at the moment within strategy, or a client that's been much more aware of it, because I feel like the rest of them are just sort of like trying to get as close as possible without falling off the edge, which, you know, I don't mind doing that as well, just because it means that strategy sort of like stays quite linear.
I think with that as well though, it's just about, again, putting yourself in the consumer's shoes of, you know, £5 say versus 200. Yes, obviously there's a very big price discrepancy there, but at the same time it's almost, again, that reframing of you could, how many £5 pans are you going to buy over your lifetime, whereas the £200, it's that quality, it's almost like that investment.
It's an investment,
so it's kind of, in a way, just going after an audience that probably treated things as not disposable income, but, you know, more like the throwaway purchases, because you know you're going to have to replace, mm-hmm. whereas actually, if you just made this one-time purchase of a more substantial amount, you probably wouldn't have to do it again for a lot longer time period. So I think, don't feel scummy about going after different audiences.
I do. I just feel like sometimes I get so attached to things, and like, I know that sounds really stupid, but I get attached to certain things and I'm like, oh God, I'm going to have to change that, and I'm not going to serve the ad to poor Michelle who really wants a casserole dish, and she's not going to see it anymore. And I know I shouldn't think like that, because
you're not
going to
serve, you're not going to serve that to yourself anymore, Liv. That's the problem. You just ruled yourself out your targeting.
literally. What about you though, Steph? I suppose it's a little bit different in content. Like, do you have to reword things and make them a little bit more sort of like easier to digest?
Yeah, we have changed sort of tact on how we position things. So things like Klarna and that ability to still be able, because there's certain purchases we are still going to have to make that do cost more. So it's just about that reassurance for consumers of, yes, we know you've got to make this purchase, but do you know what? As a brand, we're here to help. You can do it in installments. So then it feels a little bit more like, okay, I haven't got to go without. So again, it is just that reframing of the message we're trying to convey. But we've also done a lot more informational content and a lot more sort of just comforting and reassuring in times like this where things are so uncertain, and we have just come out of a pandemic and gone into a recession. Like, there's not a lot of joy at the moment. So where we can help brands to do that, I think makes all the difference, because tuning into a podcast is usually what people do for a bit of joy, but I think this episode at the minute
needs to come with a warning at the start, doesn't it?
Just sort of like just pausing for a minute and just taking a breather and just moving away from the doom and gloom. Has it just started raining for anyone else that's recording right now?
Yeah.
Because it's like pathetic fallacy.
It felt very timely, yeah. It absolutely started pouring about 5 minutes ago. Yeah,
so apologies to anyone that's listening that can just hear rain, because we haven't, you know, put that as background noise. That is just the weather. But moving back onto it, I think lots of different businesses at the minute to consumer companies are struggling a lot more than business to business. What do you guys think?
I think B2C always feels it first, don't they? Because who are the first people to get squeezed? It's your average person on the street. But obviously that then has a knock-on effect, doesn't it? Because a lot of B2B companies sell to companies that sell to the consumer. So if those B2C companies feel it, a lot of B2B ones will as well. And I also think, B2B companies are going to feel it as well, because you look at ourselves as an agency. We're being more cautious with our decision making. We were about to go and make a huge investment in the office a few months ago, and we've decided to put that on pause because of the economic uncertainty. I think that will happen. It knocks everybody's confidence because you're just not sure about what happens in the future. And that's the same whether you're a consumer or whether you run a business. There's that level of uncertainty that just means you can't make decisions with the same level of confidence as you can before, because this big scary thing's on the horizon. And the last thing you want to do is, as a business, go out and pay for something or buy something and then be 6 months down the line and think, I wish you had that cash in the bank.
Yeah, I think that it's, as sort of just a consumer and not a business, just as me, I'm not the brightest, to be fair. So I'm very cautious in terms of the fact of, you know, there's only me that's got the income coming in. So, you know, I need to be very aware of my money, because otherwise, you know, I could end up without a home, I could, you know, anything could happen, and I've got to have those sensible decision makings. But at the same time, when events like this are happening, there's almost a part of me that sometimes thinks, well, not here for a long time, here for a good time. Also, I feel like I need a little treat, so hence I'm going to a festival that I may not come back from, we will see. It's sort of like, where I can, I will still have it that, you know, life is short. Everything's uncertain, regardless of there being a particular crisis happening. So I don't know. I think there is still, that's where brands, I think, can have that reassurance of there will still be that audience that want to just, you know, treat themselves and want to still see almost that British demeanour of carry on regardless. Like, it's kind of that mentality we have, that we like to see business as usual. Because I think the moment there's any uncertainty that we visibly see, we're not good with the panic-inducing. So it's a lot of different plates, I think, to have juggling all at the same time.
I personally defo struggle with the, shall I be sensible and save, or shall I just go and, you know, I was just about to say something inappropriate, just go and spend it all at once. and just, like, I am so rubbish with money, so like I'm really trying to make a conscious effort to sort of like, you know what, I'm not investing sort of like for tomorrow, I'm investing for a year's time when I'll have a house and, you know, have a well-behaved dog. At the moment I've got a really not very well-behaved dog, so that's probably why you can hear him barking in the background. But if I do save, I could get him training and stuff, so I don't know, I just need to think of the bigger picture. But I feel like a lot of people in my age group, sorry oldies, do struggle with that as well. Not you Steph, but you Chris. you're past the threshold.
I'll happily class myself as an oldie. I think the other thing that is probably important to talk about when we're talking about from making decisions at a business level is that, you know, we've obviously got like a duty of care to our employees. The last thing I want to do is go out and make rash decisions that actually, because the decisions we make don't just impact our own livelihoods, it impacts the livelihoods of the 60 people that work for us. So there's that added responsibility that if we cock things up, it's there's a lot of people that get impacted by it.
Do you feel like extra pressure that with that? Because obviously you're like the MD and you have got to make that decision, you've got to make that call. I don't want to sound like, do you lose sleep at night, but do you feel it, like, once you shut your laptop at after five?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's always in mind. I mean, we, as an agency, are really lucky. Financially, we're in a really healthy position. We've got a healthy amount of cash behind us. So, no, I'm not losing too much sleep, to be honest, because we're in such a healthy position.
You know,
if we weren't in such a healthy position and we had this in, on the horizon, it would be really, really scary. But, yeah, at the risk of tempting fate, we're all right. You know, we're financially very, very healthy. Obviously, without going into the details and what have you, because it's not appropriate. But, yeah, we're very, very healthy. So it's something to bear in mind. And like I say, we sat down as a team a few months ago and just said, right, we're just going to be sensible with non-essential expenditure. So refurbing the office for 50, 60, 70 grand, we just thought, do you know what, that's not essential. But then we've put a similar level of investment into the cost of living bonus we've paid to everybody to help fund that increase in fuel costs. So it's just about putting it in the right places and just being a little bit sensible and not being too reckless.
Being
not that I feel we were ever reckless, but yeah, being
I don't know, that Lamborghini you bought on the company the other day, it was pretty reckless.
The click through Lambo.
Yeah. Click through thing. I feel like obviously within our company we are, I don't want to say lucky because luck doesn't come into it, obviously, like there's a lot of hard work that goes into it. But there is a lot of companies that are in the same industry as us that aren't going to be as lucky, and I say that in quotation marks, but, you know, aren't going to be as, you know, better off with finances and stuff. What sort of, like, putting advice to that, what type of advertising and marketing do you think is most essential during a recession, and how should businesses and agencies handle that sort of, like, advice moving forward? I feel like that was a really, really good question. Apologies.
I think it's really important to keep a balanced view of short-term and long-term. And what you see a lot of advertisers do is panic and cut the channels where you don't see an immediate response. So things like paid search. So I worked in paid search in the last recession, and it was great because everyone put the money there because it was an immediate return. But I think there's got to be that balance of short-term and long-term, because, you know, there's your channels like SEO, content, PR, where it doesn't always generate an immediate return. It's about building brand equity. It's about educating your consumer. Yes, you might think, oh, we can save a few thousand pounds a month here, but actually the long-term impact of that is going to be huge. So I understand the need to balance budgets and what have you and keep a focus on the short term, but I think my key piece of advice is balance short-term and long-term objectives, and don't just look at, right, what's driving immediate sales today? Right, that stays, everything else goes, because actually I think you're going to cause quite a lot of long-term damage. And then I think, and I know this leads nicely onto the next section, but probably the big thing, the big area everyone needs to be investing in times like this is conversion rate optimization, right? Because it costs money to get potential customers onto your site. If you're not doing everything you can do to convert those potential customers, you're wasting money. And the last thing you can do in potential times of recession, of hardship, of budget cuts and all that sort of stuff, is waste any money. So that, you know, that's probably the channel that if I was running a marketing department somewhere, that'd be where I'd be looking to put any spare cash at the moment, and getting my site as watertight and tip-top as possible before things start to squeeze.
Do you reckon that's the first step to be for a blog, a brand being recession-proof then, just like Crow?
I think there's lots of first steps. You know, you've got to make sure you've got complete efficiency in your paid search, that your paid social strategy is on point, that your content strategy is actually addressing the concerns and the queries that your consumers have, that you're still focusing on your SEO. But yeah, I think the big thing that wraps around all of that has got to be what we call our conversion-centric approach. It's got to be how do you get more from the same budget, or how do you get the same results from a smaller budget? You know, that's the strategy we lead clients with, is that conversion-centric approach and having conversion-related elements in everything we do. Because, yeah, I think it's criminal if you're spending money on paid search, paid social, putting your time and effort into SEO and content, but you're not actually looking at the user experience, the way they interact with your site, where they're dropping off, you're just throwing good money after bad sometimes.
I think as well, like coming from, obviously Crow's delivery, but coming from like the actual like day-to-day delivery point of view, because I know Crow's sort of like a wider journey, like within paid social, the one thing that I worry about at the moment when the recession does hit or just before it does is clients just pulling back on their spend and wanting to move, like you say, all the budget away from the sort of like the longer tail, like awareness consideration campaigns and straight into conversion, and then just losing the other parts of the funnel, which if anything are really a lot more important than just conversion. And to be fair, I'll struggle with that advice day to day, not in a recession with clients, because some clients it's like talking to a brick wall and you're like, no, like you've got to do this for this to happen, then for that, you know, for that person to convert. And I feel like at the moment that's probably the soundest piece of advice you can give to someone who is investing like in social search, display, anything like that, and haven't taken that dive into Crow or into any sort of like UX design at the minute.
I think the other big thing for, it's probably step zero, to be honest, before you get to step one, is make sure you've got your data, your analytics sorted, so you've got a really sound, solid view of how every channel's performing and how it's interacting, because we make these statements like paid social's top of funnel, but really, people need to know that. They need to know that, actually, if we turn all our paid social off, what is the impact? How many customers on PPC, on SEO, does it impact? So that's step zero, effectively, is get your analytics sorted, make sure your data's as accurate as possible. And, you know, we're what are we now? What month are we in?
August, just about.
We're 10, 11 months away from GA, like old GA being sunsetted and GA4 being the platform. You know, step one now, migrate to GA4, get that perfect setup. Otherwise, the last thing you want is inconsistencies in data when you're looking this time next year and you've not got a consistent data set to review against. So number one, get your data sorted, get your views absolutely straight, because you need to know with absolute clarity, and it's really difficult. Like this, I say it like it's a dead easy thing to do, but you need a really solid view on actually how these channels are influencing each other, rather than the anecdotal, or we know people will see it on paid social and search on paid search. That will happen, but you need to know how much that happens and actually what is the impact going to be.
I think with that as well, the having your data lined up and having that clear view, but it's also about the insights as well from your audience base, because we're human, we change our minds, we change our behaviours all the time. So in an event like this, you can't keep selling to the same set of people because things have changed. So it's also getting that view of, all right, what does our consumer landscape look like right now? Where are they at? What's their shopping behaviour turned into? What are they looking for? So you can adapt your strategy. And I completely agree, like Crow, it's the most important thing at a time like this. I mean, it's at the forefront of our strategies, regardless of a recession, but I think especially now it's about brands not panicking, which again, easier said than done, but thinking, hold on, this is our budget. How do we make it work harder and more efficiently? So you've got your consumer insights and what they're currently thinking, feeling. Then you've got where the channel benchmark performance were. But it is making sure that the channels work together. So Liv, like you said, that is such a common thing with clients of not understanding that there's more to life than the conversion. Because ultimately, if that's all you're focusing on all the time, you're just selling to the same people over and over again. In a time like this, it's also where you start to bring in that new customer acquisition. So start reaching new audiences who've got questions, be the brand that reassures them or informs them. And you're guiding them into the funnel, introducing them to the brand, and then it can be, you know, when we come out of this, your brand's already positioned itself as the go-to.
Yeah, there's plenty of studies that reference that those brands that continue to invest during not just recession, but things like COVID as well. Obviously, COVID wasn't a recession, but it was a it was a freak period, shall we say. Those brands that keep investing throughout come out and recover at a far faster rate than those that don't. Because effectively, if you cut your budget, you're neglecting your audience for a period of time, aren't you? And you can't just expect, oh, the economy's recovered, all my customers are going to come flooding back to me. Because if someone else has kept their marketing strategy going, kept talking to your customers, kept educating them, kept informing them, they're going to go to them and they're not going to come to you. Again, it's a very easy thing to say because you've got to balance, right? You can't just lose money month on month. If that's happening, you've got to pull back. But I think the thing that's like really clear is you've got to change your strategy. If you're going into this period of let's just run the same strategy we've run for the last 2-3 years, regardless of whether you keep spending or not, you're going to fail. Like, you've got to adapt and you've got to keep the investment there, and then you'll come out of this absolutely flying. Cutting your budget and running less of the same strategy that you've always been running, it's a recipe for failure, unfortunately.
It must be sort of like quite scary though, as a new business that hasn't been built, you know, that might have been built off the back of COVID, sort of like going into recession. It's something that obviously is gonna happen, like we can't stop it from happening unless sort of like, you know, we do lots of things. But it must be like a giant leap of faith for them to think, you know what, let's keep this level of investment or let's keep our strategy and see where it takes us at the end of it. Because a lot of businesses now are just going to be like shaking in their boots if they're not 100% sure of it. Which, if I had my own business that was sort of, well, you know, that was e-com and that was, you know, going to depend on people's sort of like intent to purchase, I would be f***ing myself.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's not forget, this isn't the first recession we've ever had. It won't be the last recession we ever have. And this is where I think, as marketing leaders, people have got to earn the money, right? And they've got to guide that strategy, and they've got to improvise, adapt, overcome, or whatever. Is that the SES?
Yeah. whatever
they say. Yeah, but you know, it's so true, isn't it? It's not an easy decision to make. If it was an easy thing to do, we wouldn't be having this podcast, because nobody ever cut their budgets. Nobody would ever be pulling channels. And this is why the best marketers run the best strategies and their brands accelerate out of this. And the people that don't think like that don't. Mm.
Yeah. I think sometimes as well, and this feels like a really manipulative thing to say, but the whole point of us as marketers is that people don't want to feel like they're being sold to. So if you, in this kind of like time of recession, just cut back suddenly and kind of disappear from the ether of marketing, it's almost saying that, yeah, I am literally here to just flog you stuff. And that can have a real detrimental effect on people. So whether we like it or not, there are brands we've got massive affinity with, and yes, we do buy from them, but at the same time, there is that loyalty. So I think still having a presence and still keeping things going, it is really key. But Chris, like you said, you know, there's been recessions before, there'll be again. You were around in 2008. I also was, but thankfully was still young enough to be in education. Liv, I think, what, were you born?
I was seven.
Yeah. You were seven. Wow. Good God.
How was it for you, Liv?
Honestly, it was such a tough time.
But for you, Chris, does it feel or look any different this time around? Is it like a case of, you know, from 2008 to now, advances in technology? Is that going to offer different outlooks? Like, how do they kind of stack up against each other?
Yeah, it's a very different time. And I would say I was still relatively young and naive back then, as in I didn't pay that much attention to what was going on. And actually, I was relatively luckily in a fortunate space in that digital was still relatively nascent. But the one thing digital really had going for it was its measurability. So actually, what we saw in 2008 was a lot of people shifted budgets from more traditional methods that you couldn't measure, in the way we're telling people not to do now with you know, like their content, their SEO, their PR, into paid search. So flukily, I was in an okay position. It's obviously very different this time around, and this is what I say about making sure you get your data sorted, because data's moved on a long, long way since 2008. Things like paid social didn't really exist. And things like cookie depreciation and third-party cookies being banned weren't problems either. You could track people. You didn't have to worry about GDPR or any of that stuff that we have to contend with today. So it was an easier playing field to be on, if you like, because you could track people pretty much from start to finish. People didn't really have, yeah, they had mobiles, but mobile internet wasn't massive back then either, so device switching wasn't even that much of an issue. Like, it was pretty easy to demonstrate the value start to finish of a user journey. We're in a much different space now. There's a lot more digital channels. There's people's attention is far more thinly spread, with things like TikTok, YouTube, all that sort of stuff being much, much bigger. So there's far more places for customers to go, and it's far harder to tie the data together. So I think that's going to be the slightly more difficult thing this time round, is keep improving the value of the channels you're doing, because of the data challenges that exist now, the attention challenges that exist, and the kind of sheer diversity of channels. There was Google and Yahoo and display advertising, and kind of that was it back in the good old days. Now you've got all sorts.
Do you think, sort of like in this recession period now, that, like, two in one question, do you think it's more important for businesses to be targeting new customers or just focusing on loyal customers? And then within that, should they be focusing on short-term sales and goals, which I know that we've already covered off a little bit on, or focusing on long-term brand health?
Again, it's I think, recession or not, you've always got to look after your loyal customers, right? If you neglect your current customers, you're not going to last very long. There's always got to be that healthy balance between customer acquisition and customer retention. And I don't think that really changes unless you're significantly less likely to be able to acquire new customers. The balance between short-term and long-term, again, I don't think that really changes. I think you should always have a healthy eye on both. The difference is, during times of recession, during times of economic downturn, if you're a marketing director, a head of digital, you're going to have far more scrutiny put on what are your short-term numbers. Because if your short-term numbers are poor, you might not get to the long-term. And again, this is where it's a really challenging role, leading the marketing of a business through this, because the right thing to do is keep that balance, but all the pressure that's on you is going to be on the short term, like from your board, from your business owners, your business directors. So you've got to keep strong and keep that healthy balance, otherwise you're going to come out of it in a mess, because you're effectively going to be firefighting for a year or however long this recession lasts, and then you're going to come out of it and you're like, right, what's our actual brand position, what's our strategy, how are we doing this? And if you've not thought about that for the last year, because you've been firefighting trying to make each month's number positive or to hit a target, you're going to be in a difficult position.
And I know that you mentioned earlier as well about, like, obviously supply chain issues from, like, the port in Shanghai and stuff like that. What do you think the right approach is for companies that are, like, having issues with, like, supply chains, and how can their marketing strategy sort of, like, have a positive impact on it?
I think it's difficult, obviously, because if you've got nothing to sell or you've got very limited stock to sell, it's tough. But I think what you can do is you can keep building that brand equity, build an audience, build a community, if you like. You know, they're a relatively local business to us, but look at the community Gymshark have built. Absolutely amazing. You can still do that sort of stuff. You can still build that feeling towards your brand. so that when your supply chain issues ease, because they will, because these things never last forever, because they're worth such huge sums of money, they will be solved by people far cleverer than you or I.
I don't know. I'm pretty clever.
Well, if you can get on all these challenges we've talked about, Liv, and just solve them.
Yeah, of course I can.
That'd be good.
Right after global warming,
Global warming first. Yeah, you and Greta can sort that out, and then we'll move on to the economy. It's not going to last forever. So I think you've just got to be smart and shift the intentions of what you do. Build that community. Build that engagement. Build that rapport towards your brand, so that when you're back and your supply chain issues have been resolved, You'll fly again, won't you? Because things are going to fly off the shelf. Ultimately, if you don't do that, the supply chain issue is going to be resolved, but no one's going to be interested because you've not spoken to them for however long it's taken.
And Steph, being the content queen and the content expert here, how important is the messaging that's being used during times like this, specifically around sort of like businesses that are going to need to have a recession strategy? Do you think it's vital that, I know that we said earlier about having that a bit more emotional, strategy towards it. Is it still, going to be important for companies that are struggling more so as well?
Yeah, definitely. Although just on that, Liv, if we can change my title to Content Queen, I am here for that.
Cool,
I love it. Thank you. But no, it completely is. I mean, the point of content is it is that human connection. So we connect the channels from, beginning to end, but we also connect brands to the user. And I think at times like this, emotion is what really resonates. So it is, like we sort of mentioned earlier, that reassurance. It is sort of shifting the intent and shifting the strategy to adapt to that. So, big purchases, say that you can pay in installments, make it so it's that investment piece. But also for brands where the supply chain issues are happening, again, it's that reframing to this is the perfect time for brands to kind of get their ducks in a row from a performance of the website. So organic's really important in this. You can get the site, core web vitals, get your site speed fixed. Take from a content perspective sort of the longevity side. So go after, what are people searching for? Is it because, with a recession, it means we're not going out? So it's kind of like COVID all over again. So, for homeware brands, can we give them easy tips and tricks that are cost effective to decorate the kitchen? It's just about being there and being there in a relevant way that sort of what people are going through, you can provide an answer to a question or give a bit of entertainment, like TikTok. I mean, that got me through COVID. It was just 4 hours of a wormhole watching videos. So having those brands there and present and even connecting on a human level of saying, yeah, we feel it with you, it can go a long way. And I think it's, again, at the same time, getting that foundational side in place with the Crow perspective. Change the page design so that when, we do come out of this, like you say, Chris, because we will, it means that when we're back to making purchases, you've made it really easy for the user to do that. You've got a beautifully designed page that makes adding to cart really simple. You've got all your technical issues resolved, and you've also reached out to new audiences that can't wait to buy from you.
I love that. I think that's a dead good answer.
With that, though, so obviously, again, Chris, harking back to the fact that you were knocking around in 2008... With that recession and coming out of it, what are your thoughts on positioning for the recovery? So like we just said, it's a good time to get everything, sort of your house in order. But consumer attitudes, again, will shift and change. How early should a brand be sort of positioning for that recovery?
I think you've always got to have one eye on it, haven't you? And actually, I think if you kind of have a strategy along the lines of what we've been talking about and what you've just said, as use this time to get your house in order, have a site that you've tested to within an inch of its life, so it's like the virtual equivalent of going to IKEA, whereby your journey through the site is incredibly well crafted to make you buy some tea lights and a potato masher and something else you didn't think you needed. If you do all this stuff during recession and you keep the investment up, you keep building your audience, you keep engaging with them, you've you've fixed all your issues on your site, you've got an absolutely, it'll never be perfect, but as close to perfect as possible user experience through the site conversion process, you're going to be so well set up when consumer confidence returns that you're going to be absolutely flying. So I think you've always got to have one eye on recovery in the long term. But obviously you've got to get yourself through the short term to make sure you're still there, still trading for when the upturn comes back. Let's start talking about the positives. When everyone's happy and got more money to spend and there's no wars and all that sort of stuff. Maybe a new government, who knows? We don't get too political. I think you've always got to have one eye long term. But yeah, if you're doing these sorts of things, you're going to be so well set up for when things start flying again that, yeah, you'll really capitalise.
That's a nice little end note, I think. Unless there's any other comments that you wanted to add, that the world's going to end, or just to top it off.
Well, I hope the world doesn't end. I don't want it to.
Me neither.
No, let's hope not.
But to end on an extra positive note, it's time for a random question. The whole of this podcast, obviously, it's been quite depressing. I've been trying to think of something to sort of like lift the mood a little bit, and I was thinking, you know what? Let's maybe ask about your proudest achievement. I was like, you know what? That's not random, is it? And it's called Liv's Random Questions for a reason. So, my question is, if you started your own cult, what would it be called and what would your values be? Like, and who would you want to join it?
Wow.
Yep. Chris, you can go first.
This is the problem of being the guest, isn't it? I normally get a bit of thinking time for your random questions.
Nope, not anymore.
What would I call it? I'm going to have to go boring and just call it the Cult of Chris. What would my values be? Don't talk to me. Do as you're told. And leave me alone.
Father? You should call it the father cult.
I mean, that advice applies perfectly to the kids, so yeah.
Nice. Okay, cool. I was expecting it to be a little bit more like...
Okay. Hopefully that's yours and Steph's, so we finish on a positive.
Well, Steph, what's yours?
Oh, I'm really sorry. That isn't going to be mine.
Oh, no!
So, all right. I don't know if it's a cult, so I've had to try and bring a human element into it, so this could be interesting. So, it kind of stems from my lifelong ambition. So it'd be Keeling's Canines. So it would be basically a lot of dogs involved, but I don't think the dogs would know they were in a cult. So to make it a bit more of a culty vibe.
Culty, yeah.
You'd
eat them.
Live, no. There's few people that I like in life. So I think this would be my chance to just, you know, harking back to the episode where you got it out of me of my very keen love of people like Jack Grealish. I think it'd then be just select men that I like and they can be in the cult with me. And our values would be look after the dogs, drink baby Guinnesses. And that is, yeah, that's about as far as my hobbies go, I think.
Yeah, I want to change my answer. Nice. I don't want humans in my cult. I just want a load of animals. It's basically a zoo.
only Steph can have that, sorry.
Thank you, Liv. What would yours be? Because I feel like you've got this planned.
I haven't, and if I'm 100% honest, I was just thinking, shit, I haven't thought of that. So I've just searched good names for cults on my phone, and the top one is Celestial Dragon. So I'm going to go with that, considering it's the top one. And to be fair, my cult would be quite a cool place to be, I think. It would just be, you can wear what you want, you can do what you want, just you just got to bring like good energy. I sound a bit like hippie, and I'm not.
Yours is a 60s loving commune, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't want to say
is,
it.
Mine is just seeking peace and quiet and being left alone. And Steph's is just dogs.
Sex, drugs and rock and roll. Well,
I'm changing the name of mine. I'm changing it to Know You're a Cult.
See you later Tuesday. No, that's rubbish. Anyway, I think that just about wraps up for this episode. I'm excited to do this outro. I feel like Chris smashes it every time, and I'm not gonna, but let's give it a go. If you have enjoyed it, please leave us a positive review on whichever platform you're listening on, and make sure that you follow us so you don't miss a future episode. If you'd like to learn more about recession ready marketing, be sure to check out future blog posts and webinars by Clickthrough Marketing over at clickthrough-marketing.com, and connect with us on all your preferred social media platforms. See you next time. Bye.